Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Thank you, Carol. And we are waiting on a CBS report on impeachment, and they're doing the vote right now. In lieu of that right now, we have a bunch of other things I want to get to. I'm going to open up the phone lines this afternoon on a very, very specific question off the topic of impeachment. I want to talk about the vaccine. And here is my question. I'm seeing a lot of people that are on Twitter. I guess my question is, have you had the vaccine? If you've had the vaccine and you've had a reaction or no reaction, I'd love to talk to you right now. 436-7900. And here's why. And I'm hoping that this isn't widespread and prevalent, but I don't think it's going to take a whole lot to maybe throw this thing off for people being worried. Now, I'm seeing a bunch of Twitter reaction today. For people talking about the vaccine saying it's not that big of a deal, you know, had a little bit of soreness, things along those lines. Here's someone that says, if my only COVID sick days are a couple of days recuperating from the shots, I will be very thankful. Somebody else says, I had the second dose yesterday, Pfizer, sore arm, took some Advil, it went away. Today I can feel it when I press the spot. That's all. Same holds for my wife. Now, what I've heard, and I want to talk to anybody who's had reaction or maybe knows someone who's had reaction, 436-7900. I had a couple of people who told me that, and one was a healthcare worker. They got the shot, the first shot. Actually, this was someone who also had COVID, and they had a lot of pain for almost 24 hours. You know, pressure points on the body where even lying down was painful. And that didn't sound good. And I guess another coworker had the same thing. So the question then becomes, if that happens, and I'm hoping that the answer to this question is it's not prevalent. You're going to have some people who have different reactions. How many people are going to want the second vaccine? Now, I want the vaccine. I'm not too crazy about feeling miserable for 24 hours, but I'm also not crazy about the vaccine. So I'm just curious to see if people want to weigh in on this afternoon before we get to some other stuff. 436-7900. Sue, welcome to KMOX. How are you?
I am fine.
Have you had the vaccine, or do you know someone who's had the vaccine?
I have had the vaccine. Number one, not a big deal. Sore arm, slightly sore arm. Number two, a little bit of backache, muscle aches, but that was it.
Now, did you get the shot because you're a healthcare worker, or was there another reason?
I'm a healthcare worker.
Okay. Have you had colleagues that have had bad reactions, or has it generally been sort of the same situation that you're describing?
Kind of the same situation. Nobody's really had anything severe at all, honestly.
That's good to hear.
I got to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. All right.
And for the most part, it's been muscle aches, joint pain. A couple of people had a little bit of nausea, but nothing like vomiting, severe vomiting or anything like that. Just nausea, muscle aches, you know. Sore arm on the second shot was, I mean, it was worse than a flu shot sore arm. So.
Now, you understand my point there. My concern is that when people hear, if they hear stories of friends, I have someone else that just texts me saying she's got a friend who's a nurse, got very sick, flu-like symptoms for 3 days after the first shot. So I want people to take the vaccine if they feel comfortable with it, but I'm worried that if you're going to hear more reactions like that, you'll have people backing off. Or maybe after the first shot saying, hell no, I'm not taking the second shot. So that's why I'm bringing it up here.
Yeah, but on an average of the people that I know that I work with, most of the people predominantly had muscle aches, sore arm.
Good to hear. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Tom, you're next on KMOX. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had the shot, and I'm sore after 20 minutes of fitness. It was nothing.
So no big deal at all? No reaction outside of that?
It was no difference than a flu shot. I mean, the sore spot on my arm, that was it.
All right, good. Good to hear that. And I think that's generally what people are saying, which is what I like to hear. Here's somebody else. Hey, I have friends listening to that. That's great. My friend Bob Fino, who used to work here, said Jesse had both shots, no side effects. And he's a nurse. That's right. Jesse's a nurse at Barnes. So that's good to hear. So generally, let's take a couple more here. Denny, you're on KMOX.
Yeah, I got the shot yesterday at VA. And no effects, no side effects, no adverse effects. And I'm actually allergic to shellfish and iodine, so I was a little concerned about it, to be honest with you, but nothing. So, the other thing I want to say is the people at VA did a terrific job. They really had their act together. Of all the government organizations I can think of right now, they probably had their act together better than anybody. So just, hurrah for the VA.
Well, that's good to hear. Wow, because especially considering, you know, the decades of things that have happened at the VA and the negative publicity. So that's good to hear. Let me take one more call on this. Mary, you get the final word. Go ahead. Hi, Mary. Well, maybe it's not Mary because, that's you. Or Barry.
It's Kevin.
Oh, well, we'll just go to Kevin. That sounds exactly like Mary. I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're not going to talk firearms, but I'll still talk to you about the shot. I had both of them. Had the one before Christmas. Had the other one last week, I think it was, and nothing whatsoever. If you really searched around on your arm, you could feel where they gave you the injection, a little bit of a tight spot on there, but no pain, no everything was normal. I purposely didn't take time off work because I didn't want to have a day down, because everybody was saying, well, if you have it, you're going to feel like crap for a day or two. And there was absolutely no side effects whatsoever. If I didn't know I had it, I would have never known I had it.
Well, that's good to hear. So I'm hearing, this is what I was worried about this afternoon. Thanks. Sorry, Kevin, I called you the wrong name. The producers might have gotten a little confused. Is there still a Mary on? We can maybe take her because I feel bad for Mary. But I was worried that I was going to hear a bunch of stuff from people saying, oh, this is terrible. And you're going to have some side effects that are not good. But, you know, overall, it sounds like most people are not having difficulties. And that's what I'm seeing on Twitter as well. So that is encouraging. The House is voting right now on the second impeachment. The vote is underway. So far, there have been 156 Democrats. Yes, only 7 Republicans have voted in the yes column. So we'll see. There have been several Republicans that have tweeted out and issued statements throughout the day, especially after last night when Liz Cheney issued her statement as one of the members of leadership, essentially also giving other Republicans, if they felt like they could, the approval, if you will, to vote for impeachment. Keep in mind that the way that this thing goes down, and this is what happens for Democrats as well, whether you want to vote for impeachment or not, it sort of depends on the makeup of your constituency in your district, unless you just want to go out there and say, you know, throw caution to the wind and actually have political courage. But no one really does that, do they? You know, I don't really care about being reelected. Who's the person that does that? Not very many. The guy in Kinzinger in Illinois might have done that, though, a little bit. But for the most part, everyone's going to check the charts. They're going to see how this is going to affect them in the future. Speaking of being affected in the future, I just got an email, and some other folks might have as well. If you're on Josh Hawley's mailing list, he has written an op-ed for the Southeast Missourian. And the date is today, so I don't know if this was in the paper there today or if it's an afternoon paper. But this is what he writes in here. He says, as to my specific objection, I objected with regard to Pennsylvania because the state failed to follow its own constitution. By the way, there was another federal judge yesterday who ruled on Pennsylvania, disagreed with that. The Pennsylvania Constitution has been interpreted by the state's courts for over a century to prohibit mail-in voting, except in clearly stated circumstances. But last year, Pennsylvania politicians adopted universal mail-in voting anyway. Now, that's a little misleading because it was actually in 2019. What Pennsylvania did, because I've looked into this, is I think it was Act 77 is what it was called. They voted on that long, long time ago. So one of the legitimate questions, if I have Senator Hawley on in the future, hopefully I will, is why didn't you sue well ahead of what happened in the election. If you had constitutional issues with that, you should have filed your lawsuit because you knew for a year. And you only did it in Pennsylvania because you lost Pennsylvania. Why didn't you do it in Texas or Montana or other places where they changed the thing, the same thing? So he claims that the Supreme Court changed the rules for when mail-in ballots could be returned. And when citizens tried to go to court to object, the Supreme Court threw out the case on procedural grounds. My question, this is very important for Mr. Hawley, for Senator Hawley and others. And I asked this to our attorney general, too. And this is something that gets in the weeds with the legalese and everything. But one of the problems with what Senator Hawley was trying to do, and no one wanted to talk about it, is what was the remedy for that going to be? Let's say that in some weird way, the court would have taken that on. They would have heard the merits. It would have gotten to the Supreme Court. What's the remedy for that? So when a court takes on a case and they rule on a case, they have to get specific with what might happen. Therefore, the remedy. So was the remedy, and this is a rhetorical question, was the remedy in this election ever going to be any court, including the Supreme Court, throwing out hundreds of thousands of legitimate ballots just because they were counted after Election Day? Never was going to happen. And Senator Hawley knew that, okay? And that's the issue that I have. You can make a stand, but he led people to think that this was a realistic path, and it wasn't. And by the way, why only sue the states where you lost? Why not sue the states where you won? These would be some of the questions I would ask Senator Hawley when he comes on the show the next time. 3:15, we'll take a break. We still think we may have a CBS report this afternoon on impeachment. We'll get to that. We have Senator Schatz standing by on the gas tax. And Congressman Shimkus, also big story in Illinois, Mike Madigan out as speaker in Springfield. That long hold from Chicago is over, decades and decades. But will it be any better? We'll talk about it after 3:30 on KMOX. Plus, an audio cut of the day.
The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law, on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, welcome back. 3:19 at KMOX, and we're in the middle of this impeachment vote, so we'll give you the very latest on that from CBS News when we have it. We have an audio cut of the day. We're going to try to fit in some discussion here about Mike Madigan in Illinois and what's going on with that. A busy day and a lot of moving pieces here this afternoon. Joining me right now on the Bomarito Automotive guest line is the Senate President in the state of Missouri, Dave Schatz, who is a Republican from Sullivan, talking about the proposal he has to introduce, or that he has introduced, to increase the gas tax in Missouri over a course of time. Senator Schatz, how are you this afternoon? Happy New Year.
I'm doing fantastic, Mark. How are you?
First of all, my apologies, because we had you scheduled a week ago today, and we know what happened, you know, then, and I think we had you scheduled yesterday, and there was a lot of stuff going on. So my apologies, because it is a topic that, you know, I'm interested in, and I've talked about infrastructure and roads in Missouri for a long time, and I'm certainly not opposed to a gas tax increase. However, the people of Missouri, Senator, seem to be opposed to a gas tax increase because it hasn't worked when we've tried it before. So maybe explain how you're going about it this time and why you have higher hopes.
Well, I will make one comment on what we've done previously. Obviously, this is my 11th legislative session. I was on board when we tried a sales tax proposal that failed the ballot. And also when Prop D was proposed a couple of years ago, there was some confusion on that particular issue when it came to people really understanding it, that it went to roads and bridges. One thing that we've found in the process that people do believe that we need the resources to fund our roads and bridges and make sure that we take care of them adequately in the state. I don't think there's dispute of that. We did receive over a million people in support of Prop D. We about 1.2 million people voted against it. But when we kind of looked at a postmortem on that, a lot of people said it was unclear. We had Olympic medals, highway patrol. There were issues in there that were somewhat confusing.
Right, right. So, yeah, let me stop you right there, because you just kind of refreshed my memory on that, because that was one of the issues. I remember the whole Olympic medal thing, which, by the way, was a good idea, but it didn't belong in that whole deal, right?
Well, it didn't. And unfortunately, if people don't really truly understand how the sausage gets made here in Jeff City, we needed a vehicle that would obviously... we have a rule called the Hammerschmidt rule, so we had to have some sort of a vehicle to carry the tax issue, and the only vehicle at our disposal at the time was the Olympic medals. So we ended up modifying and amending a bill that came over from the House that was designed for Olympic medals, and at the end of the day, again. If I had it to do over again, I would have done something different. But we didn't have any other vehicle at the time, and unfortunately, it failed at the ballot. And so what we plan to try to do this time, and hopefully there's a – I had a meeting yesterday where we're looking at a South Carolina model where it, the tax – increasing the motor fuel tax is rebatable. Are refundable the portion of the tax that we increase to keep us under the Hancock constraints that we currently have, which would only allow us to raise the tax about 2 cents on a yearly basis. But we've looked at a potential opportunity to raise that motor fuel tax and then have that rebatable to those individuals that would want to do that. And so it's worked well in South Carolina, and so we're taking a hard look at that.
Explain that a little bit more. I'm not sure I understand that. When you say rebatable, you kind of lost me there.
Well, the portion of the tax, and our goal would probably be to raise it 10 or 12 cents over a 3 to 5 year period. But an individual could keep their receipts, and the portion of the tax that is raised could be refunded to those individuals. So they could apply for a refund on the portion of the tax that we would ultimately impose. It helps us to that point, Mark, where we're capturing that revenue for the out-of-state travelers, the trucking industry traveling through our state. They're not eligible for a rebate. So in turn, obviously, it helps us collect, you know, up to maybe 30-40% of the revenue generated is by people that don't live in Missouri.
So this would be explain the process. This would be something that goes to the voters or not?
Well, again, we could do it through the legislature. And the reason why we would use that particular model is because of the Hancock constraints. This is something that would fit under the Hancock constraints. We may go to a vote of the people, take that to a vote of the people potentially. But again, this is something that we're debating right now on what is the best mechanism or vehicle available to us. Because at the end of the day, like I said, the problem still exists. You know, we have a road and bridge system. We have 36,000 miles of roads and bridges here in the state of Missouri.
And I'm going to have to interrupt. And I knew this was going to happen, Senator. I apologize. We've tried to get you on for a week now. And lo and behold, right when you have you on, we got a CBS update.
CBS News Special Report. Here's correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
The House of Representatives is just moments away from impeaching Donald John Trump for the alleged high crime of inciting an insurrection against the United States. A majority of the House has now cast votes in favor of the impeachment resolution, including at least 10 Republicans. This vote is still open on the House floor and currently stands at 229 in favor, 195 opposed, 9 members not yet voted. It's the climax of a painful moment in American history, touched off by last week's deadly riot that left the U.S. Capitol ransacked. CBS's Steve Dorsey experienced it firsthand and has been covering today's passionate and hours-long debate. Steve?
Stephen, that riot on Capitol Hill is directly at the heart of this resolution that sets forth an impeachment, an article of impeachment against President Trump, accusing him of inciting insurrection against the government of the United States. It also accuses him of repeatedly making false statements, asserting that the presidential election was rigged and that he made statements to a crowd that encouraged and resulted in lawlessness at the Capitol. The article of impeachment sets forth a trial in the Senate that could begin perhaps a day before the inauguration at the earliest, that could result in his removal from office after the fact and disqualification to hold U.S. office, Stephen.
Well, no matter what happens next, Steve Dorsey, even as Donald Trump becomes the first president ever to be impeached twice, he has just 7 more days in office. Joe Biden will be sworn in a week from today on the same West Front platform that rioters overtook at the Capitol 1 week ago today. The question now is, once this single article of impeachment passes, and we are expecting the final vote to be announced shortly, when will the Senate begin its trial? Will it be before or after Mr. Trump's term ends? There are not a ton of precedents to draw on, but backers of this effort believe that it would be legal for the Senate to convict Mr. Trump, even as a private citizen, with an eye toward preventing him from ever running for office again. CBS News legal analyst Lori Levinson is with us now. Quite a few esoteric legal questions here underlying the fundamentals, Lori. Is it a settled question? Can a man be impeached after he's left office?
Well, it's not settled because, in fact, this hasn't been done before, especially with the president. But it seems like even Mitch McConnell is open to the argument, and that would make sense. Otherwise, you would be giving license to somebody in office to do the worst crimes the day before they leave, and there would be no repercussions. So I do think it is possible that there would be a Senate trial after Donald Trump leaves office. But what that looks like and when that takes place, nobody knows.
You have mentioned to us in our conversations that the president possibly faces other legal jeopardy in other venues.
Oh, absolutely. I think that in addition to any Senate trial on impeachment, that New York is ready for the president and probably has some indictments laying in wait. He has civil cases that he's dealing with. So there's plenty that the president's looking at in the legal front. And I think we also need to remember the nature of the trial in the Senate would not be the same as a trial in a courtroom. It's a real open question whether you could ever convict Donald Trump for criminal behavior of inciting insurrection. But that's not the issue for impeachment. The question is whether it's a high crime and misdemeanor behavior that he engaged in this last week.
On that question of incitement, through today's debate this afternoon, plenty of Republicans in the House have argued that, in their view, the president's words didn't meet the Supreme Court's test in a case called Brandenburg v. Ohio. Can you help us understand that?
Right. Well, the Supreme Court back in 1969, in order to give deference to the First Amendment, said that you can't prosecute everybody who might have said something that was uncomfortable or other people took in the wrong way. In fact, you have to show that he provoked imminent unlawful behavior. So when he said to his followers, show strength and fight like hell and march on the Capitol, was that really in an intention to incite illegal behavior? But the interesting thing here is that, frankly, the Democrats didn't charge just that in the article of impeachment. They said his overall behavior in trying to overturn a lawful election, that was what he was doing, inciting insurrection against the electoral results.
I'm Stephen Portnoy. We're bringing you a CBS News special report as the House continues voting on an article of impeachment against President Trump. It reads in part, President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government. He threatened the integrity of the democratic system, interfered with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiled a co-equal branch of government. He thereby betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. As I speak, at least 10 House Republicans have signed on to that statement. The vote is 231 in favor, 197 against. The vote is still open. Last week's deadly riot resulted in 5 deaths, dozens of arrests, and it shook Washington, D.C. to its core. As I mentioned, the president's allies in Congress have offered a defense of him. It ranged from whataboutism, suggesting that some of the things that Democrats or liberals said last year ahead of violence in Seattle and Portland and other places somehow discounts whatever the president said. They've said that the president's remarks didn't amount to incitement. We were just discussing that legal point with Lori Levinson. They've even said that this is a hasty move to impeach the president that adds to the division in the country. For his part, the president yesterday said that his remarks were totally appropriate. CBS News political analyst Leonard Steinhorn, I will note to you that several Republicans, including reportedly the Senate Majority Leader, backed this effort, although he issued a statement today saying that he's really at the moment, he hasn't decided how he will vote. Do you think we're at an inflection point right now?
Well, clearly we're at an inflection point because the Republican Party is trying to deal with the impact of Donald Trump on their party. You know, does Donald Trump continue to sort of get the loyalty of all of these people? And if he goes after the establishment of the Republican Party, even as a disgraced, twice impeached president, will that potentially rip this party apart? So people like Mitch McConnell, people like Representative Cheney, what they're thinking about right now is they have to move on from Donald Trump and to be able to articulate a Republican identity independent of him. They have to decouple Donald Trump from the Republican Party, and this is going to be difficult. Expect a lot of reckoning among Republicans in the next month, 6 months, year, 2 years ahead, because they have to figure out who they are in a post-Donald Trump era, and this is not going to be easy.
At least 10 Republicans in the House have voted in favor of this impeachment resolution. You remember last year when the House impeached Donald Trump for the phone call he had with the Ukrainian president. There were no Republicans on board. Leonard Steinhorn, on the statement that those 10 Republicans are making in the House today?
Well, for them, what the president did by inciting, as they believe, the riot in Congress really did cross the line. I mean, you have to boil it down to a very fundamental sense that the president, empowered by Article 2 of the Constitution, urged people to attack and undermine the Congress empowered by Article 1 of the Constitution. So in this article of impeachment that they passed today, when they say that he was threatening an equal branch of government, it goes to the very heart of our constitutional system, of our political system, of who we are, of checks and balances, and the separation of powers. And if you could have one branch of government arguably threatening, physically threatening, and potentially threatening the lives of people in another branch of government, even if he didn't do it directly but indirectly by urging people to do so, that to them crossed the line, and that's why you see at least 10 of those members, Republican members, voting with the Democrats to impeach Donald Trump.
At least one of the 10 is Liz Cheney, the Republican congresswoman from Wyoming. She represents the whole state as an at-large member from Wyoming. She said in a statement yesterday that there's never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States of his office and his oath to the Constitution. There are 9 Republican colleagues who have joined with Liz Cheney. We'll get the list when we have it. I'm Stephen Portnoy. We're bringing you a CBS News special report as the House continues its vote to impeach President Trump. The vote is now 231 in favor, 197 against. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, has taken the Speaker's chair as she's ready to preside over this historic moment, Donald Trump becoming the first president ever to be impeached twice before. Steve Dorsey, let's go back to you in our Washington studio about some of the debate and what we've heard today.
Well, Republicans say this is a divisive moment. This does not unite the country after the attack on the Capitol last week, which Republicans say they've already condemned. Some Republicans who oppose impeachment still want congressional action, including what House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy is proposing in a censure of President Trump, and also a bipartisan commission that can examine the events of last Wednesday. Democrats, on the other hand, say enough is enough. Now is the time to impeach President Trump. Nancy Pelosi calling him a clear and present danger to this country. And this is a much different circumstance, Stephen, since the last impeachment. So much has happened, but so much has happened in the last 24 hours, even on Capitol Hill. Usually, most members of the House are wearing masks. Some choose not to. Now, mass compliance is being enforced.
Have all members voted?
Does any member are now to change? Let's listen in to Nancy Pelosi.
Right. The Speaker of the House presiding with the gavel in hand. No indication at the moment that she's ready to announce the tally, but on the screen it shows 231 votes in favor, 197 against. Steve Dorsey, you were saying?
I can't go.
Mask compliance. There's fines now for folks who don't wear masks. And this is an issue that was brought up in that Capitol attack because at least a handful of House lawmakers who were sequestered together in safety during that riot have tested positive for coronavirus, blaming Republicans for dismissing the disease and the protections for their colleagues.
How was mask wearing enforced today, or how widely practiced was it during today's debate?
Well, in no part of the debate did I see anyone not wearing a mask, Stephen.
All right. We are awaiting the final announcement of the tally as the House of Representatives stands poised to impeach President Trump for the second time, accusing him of inciting an insurrection against the United States.
On this vote, the ayes are 232. The nays are 197. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Okay. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing the action of the House. It's official. The House has impeached President Trump for a second time, 232 votes in favor, 197 votes against. The allegation is that last week he incited an insurrection against the country, gravely endangering the security of the United States and its institutions of government, threatening the integrity of the democratic system, interfering with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiling a co-equal branch of government. So the question now is, how soon will a trial, and it's now a question of when, not if, will a trial begin in the Senate? Steve Dorsey, what do we know about that?
Well, we know that the Democratic leader, the soon-to-be majority leader, has called for the Senate to reconvene as early as Friday to begin a trial. That's met some resistance from the spokesperson for current Senate Majority Leader, the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, with indications that the Senate won't be called back from its break until January 19th. That's the day before the inauguration. That's the earliest. And in fact, it could still be in Republican control with these two senators not seated, elected, remember, as Democrats in these runoff races until perhaps around the 22nd, Stephen, is some timing guidance that we've been given.
Right. Democrats will take control with the certification of the election last week in Georgia, with the two Democrats from that state coming in and come January 20th. When Kamala Harris becomes the vice president and the president of the Senate, then the Democrats will have the votes to have control of the chamber, have control of committees, and they will set the calendar. So it'll really be up to the current minority leader, Chuck Schumer, as to how the trial will proceed. He'll obviously need the cooperation of Republicans to move smoothly. And there have been some indications that Mitch McConnell is, well, according to reports, not displeased with the fact that the Senate will now weigh the guilt or innocence of President Trump as it assesses these charges that have been, this one charge that's been delivered by the House of, approved by the House of Representatives. It'll be delivered at a certain point. We don't know exactly when, but as Steve Dorsey was reporting, the question is, how soon will the article be transmitted to the Senate so that the Senate can proceed with a process that began in the British parliamentary system? It's actually something they no longer use across the pond, but it's we did take it from the British when the Constitution was written, and the whole idea is to give the people, through their Congress, the ability to oust a president or other officials of the government, and we've seen it before Donald Trump, twice before. There only had been two impeachments in history, Andrew Johnson in 1868 and Bill Clinton in 1998, but of late we've seen many things in America that we never thought we'd see. A deadly ransacking of the Capitol, and now a president impeached twice because his critics say he fueled it. We urge you to stay tuned as our coverage continues over these CBS News radio stations. For Steve Dorsey, for Lori Levinson, for Leonard Steinhorn, for now, I'm Stephen Portnoy, and this has been a CBS News special report.
All right, it's 3:40 at KMOX, and my apologies once again to Senator Schatz. We had to interrupt him, as I kind of predicted that we would with all this afternoon.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
3:44 at KMOX, and we kind of got thrown off here with all the impeachment stuff, and I already had plans to have former Illinois Congressman John Shipkus on the horn to talk a little bit about what's happening or what might happen in Springfield. It's weird. Do I have to call you former now? I guess so, right?
Call me just don't call me late for dinner. I guess that's the joke there.
I mean, we're going to talk about Mike Madigan here because I want your perspective. But I'm guessing you're maybe glad you're not there and weren't there a week ago, John.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, I was ready to go. You followed me for many years, and then you saw me announce I wasn't going to run, and I was slowly, you know, pulling myself back from a lot of the intrigue. You know, I've not been totally on board with the president, and this, you know, the Syrian thing was, in fact, I probably mentioned that to you. And that,
oh, yeah.
Before anyone in my office knew that that I wanted to get off the list. And with COVID, it's just 24 years. It's time for me to come home, and I'm happy to be home.
John, explain, this is, you know, it's probably a political story that's going to get overshadowed here in St. Louis, considering everything that's going on with impeachment, Senator Hawley, Cori Bush, you name it. But Mike Madigan held the post of Speaker of the Illinois House for 36 of the past 38 years. He was in the, I'm 56 years old. 50 years ago is when he took his seat in the Illinois House of Representatives. Now, Democrats probably love that, but there was this control from Chicago and Cook County because of Mike Madigan. Even Democrats finally got sick of it, and they elected a new leader today. How significant is this? And I don't know anything about this new speaker, but will it mean any change in Illinois?
Well, the new speaker is a guy named Chris Welch. I don't really don't know him either. He's a Chicagoland, the African-American, first one in the history of the state of Illinois. And I think this speaks of the political process. I think this was a final result of a, and you followed the national election, but on the state end, Republicans who were supposed to do poorly across the board did well in the General Assembly, in the House of Representatives. That's where Madigan is speaker. And a lot of that was because they were, the Democrat incumbent was tied to the speaker. And I think the Democrats finally realized that if they didn't want to lose control, they had to then, they had to oust the speaker. Now, there's that saying in politics, if you're going to take a shot at the king, you better kill him. And he is an unforgiving, in essence, ruler. But they had enough guts. They had like 19 House Democrats come out real early. They kind of joined their arms together as they tried to pull them apart, but they held firm. And I think the House General Assembly rules you can't have 60 votes, and he, with those 19, he didn't have it.
The writing was on the wall for this, of course, on Monday, because he announced that he was going to suspend his efforts to campaign, and that's when you kind of knew that the numbers were against him. It's interesting. It took too long. There's no doubt about that. And the frustration that folks in, certainly in your party, on my side of the aisle, would have with Mike Madigan, I just don't know if they can expect anything different when it comes to how business is operated. That's going to take a little time to figure out, because it's still going to be Chicago, right?
It's still going to be Chicago. But the question is there any enough reform movement to really the redistricting and the gerrymandering is, I think, which has added to the divisiveness of our nation, both in the state general assemblies and also at the federal level. So the question is, with these reform-minded folks, is there an opportunity to do a gerrymandering or redistricting reform where it's a little bit because obviously Madigan was all in on control, and he used that was one of his primary methods. And then all the money was raised by the speaker. So if you weren't in his favor, you didn't get any campaign contributions, and you couldn't run an election. So there, he goes back to the first Mayor Daley. I mean, that's how far back he goes to. And if you remember history in 1916, Chicago riots during the
early 1970s. Absolutely. Look, we're going to talk more about this as this moves on. But the first thing that they need to do is open up the House rules, because, anything that had to happen, as Madigan just said, subject to approval by the speaker, he could do anything he wanted. Congressman Shimkus, great to have you on. We'll talk more. We'll get you on the roundtable soon. 349 at KMOX.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And it's sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Going to squeeze a couple in here. Controversy in the Capitol in Washington, controversy in Clayton here in St. Louis County. Let's do Washington first. Newly sworn in Congresswoman Cori Bush, who won that election against Lacey Clay Jr. last year, making this all about white supremacy.
St. Louis and I rise in support of the article of impeachment against Donald J. Trump. If we fail to remove a white supremacist president who incited a white supremacist insurrection, it's communities like Missouri's 1st District that suffer the most. The 117th Congress must understand that we have a mandate to legislate in defense of black lives. The first step in that process is to root out white supremacy, starting with impeaching the white supremacist in chief. Thank you, and I yield back.
I'm going to have to check the audio on that one to see if she was talking about white supremacy or something else. And then there was this in Clayton. Tim Fitch, county councilman, Lisa Clancy, the county council chair, or is she? We don't really know even now.
I think the motion is in order.
There is no mechanism in our charter to remove a chair, nor in our charter, nor in Robert's rules, nor in our rules.
You are no longer the chair. So we have a motion on the floor.
That is not correct, Councilman Fitch. Your motion is not recognized.
You don't have that choice. Point of order.
Please state your point of order.
You are no longer the chair, so you have no standing to make that objection. You can make comments during the discussion period before we take our vote. There's been a motion. for presiding officer, there's been a second. The next move is for a roll call by clerk.
Bloodsport politics, no doubt about that. There are your audio cuts of the day. Total Information PM is coming up on KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.